Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, this is kind of a special veteran edition. We're veterans of the podcast world, and I feel like we're ready to contribute.
You got that veteran leadership in podcasting.
Yeah. I wouldn't say either of us are veteran leaders.
No, we're more of the guys that tag along and just kind of ride coattails. We're the Richard Jeffersons of...
Sure. I mean, technically, Nick Young's a veteran. So I feel very comfortable calling myself a veteran.
True story. I have to mention before we get started how we work in the industry. And so the word, you said the word NBA veteran together. And we have like a very specific image and like connotation and what that means. Like we think about that kind of a concept. If you just say the word veteran, like it makes me a little uncomfortable from the perspective of I feel weird about talking in those terms so much just because of the whole fact of military veterans and how much respect I have for them and not wanting to confuse the battle terms and all that.
Right.
It mostly just means like experienced in these terms, but I do feel like a little bit, because like the series that we're talking about today is the first of hopefully what I'm looking to do all season long, looking at veteran leadership, a series called The Vet, and we're starting with Jameer Nelson.
Yeah, Jameer Nelson, noted fixer of dogs and cats. That's the kind of vet you're talking about, right?
That's the vet.
Jameer is a really interesting guy, and to let the listener know, in case you didn't read in the description, at the end of this, you and I are going to talk about 15 minutes, and then at the end of this, you talk to Jameer. And so you're actually going to get to hear from him. It's not just us talking about Jameer Nelson for 40 minutes, which would be weird of us to do, but it's...
Would it, though?
Well, no, probably not. We've probably done worse. Much worse. But Jameer's cool. Like, Jameer's just a very interesting guy in that he was part of a really, I don't know if special is the right word, but like a really kind of incredible single season college team at St. Joe's.
Yeah.
And then he was kind of like heralded coming into the league because of that. Went, what, 20th? In 2004 draft. Like, he and Ben Gordon and Emeka Okafor, like those were kind of the stars of that college season, and then Jameer, like 20th pick because he's a small point guard, and had like I don't know, he had kind of a weird career in Orlando, earned the starting spot in his third season, like the full time starting spot in his third season, and then just under Stan Van Gundy, like just really learned how to play the NBA point guard position, and he was always kind of like a steady hand on the court, but he really like. Really, I mean, he became an all-star one year, and it was legitimate. It's not like the Jamal McGlure all-star. Like, he really made an all-star team.
Yeah, people kind of joke about it the same way. They're like, oh, and Mo Williams was one. And I would actually argue Mo Williams deserved to be one, too.
Yeah.
But Jameer was really – he was fantastic for those Magic teams. He was a big part of that success. You mentioned the college stuff. You know, it was 2004, so I was, like, finishing up college and getting drunk a lot. So, like, I was a little distracted, like – I've forgotten that he won the Wooden, the Naismith, the Bob Cousy, the Rupp, and the Oscar Robertson Award.
Yeah.
Like he won every Player of the Year award. Fun note that I think that most of the younger listeners probably don't know, his running mate on that St. Joe's team, none other than Delonte West.
Hot sauce in my bag.
Which actually it's sad because now I'm realizing I was like, man, a lot of the younger listeners are probably like, who?
Right. Google Delonte West and then just don't believe half of it. from whatever right. comes up. But yeah, that was like a really dynamic college backcourt.
Yeah. And then one of the things that there's a lot of reasons that I decided to profile Jameer first for this series to talk about the bigger picture veteran perspective, and one of it is his comments I've always been kind of interested by, because as an example, like a lot of people would kind of downplay the success that they've had under coaches. I mean, this is a players league. This is a very much a players league. Yep. And so like they'll talk nicely about some coaches, or especially during the season they'll share some credit, but overall, you know, there's kind of a, you know, the guys on this team and all that kind of stuff, and Jameer's always been very much like, no, Stan Van Gundy is the reason that I've been as successful in the NBA as I have. Like I was determined to come in. I knew I was talented. I knew I could do, but, he called him offensively. He was like, he was a genius, because one of the things I talked to him about in the first part of the interview, which isn't necessarily in the podcast. So there's a big feature out on CBSSports.com. That's like the written part, and it deals with the game and how he kind of plays as a veteran. And then there's a podcast part in which we kind of talk about what it's like to be a veteran and his experience in the league in that role. But one of the things that he told me about coming out of college, because you know, I mentioned to him, he's a scoring point guard. And back in 2008, which is when he kind of started to really rise into a more star position, you know, scoring point guard was kind of a bad word. That was kind of a bad term. You were supposed to be a pure point. And instead, he was always a scoring guard. I mean, Hedo Turkoglu was the primary ball handler in a lot of those pick and roll sets in Orlando. And so he was kind of a different model. And you look today, and now it's completely different, where you have to have a scoring point guard in order to be successful.
Yeah, you really do. And it is kind of funny. Like, some guys still get killed for it. Like, Kyrie Irving, if he goes for 32 and gets one assist, he'll get killed for it, right? Russell Westbrook constantly gets killed for not being a quote-unquote point guard, even though he averaged 8 assists last year. And yet, for the most part, it's just become this accepted part because it really does, you know, I don't think it means everything. I think it depends on how your team is built, but you really do want that guy at the point of attack to just be, you know, kind of a killer. I mean, we saw how valuable it was with Steph, and that's not to say Jameer was Steph-like in any by any means, but especially in that All-Star season when Orlando was just looked to be like such a I mean, they ended up going to the finals that year, and he just they looked to be such an important kind of evolution of the NBA with the four out and Dwight Howard manning the middle and all this stuff. Like, Jameer was 50% from the field, 45% from three, 16 points a game, almost 5.5 assists a game. He was 88.7%. I mean, he was almost 50-40-90.
Yeah,
that year. I mean, he was incredible, and it was, you know, granted it was, you know, some injuries, and he barely played half the season, but he was that good throughout most of it, or throughout what he did play. And then from there, like, they needed him. As important as Rashard Lewis was, and as important as Hedo Turkoglu was, he was the kind of starting point for everything. Yeah. And it was that, you know, pick and roll with Dwight, and then that kind of set everything up.
I thought you would like this quote from him, because I talked to him about how there's this perception a lot of times that guys need to change what they do. And I think that that's true for if you're a point guard and you're not necessarily good at anything, and you're just kind of like Tony Roten, right?
Right.
Where it's like you're athletic and you do some stuff, but there's no real sense. You need to find something that you're good at. You need to find something that you can look at and say, this is my game. Otherwise, you're just kind of lost in the league. But Jameer coming in, like, he was a scorer. Like, that's what he knew.
Yeah.
He was like, I think at this point in my career, I'm pretty set on who I am as a person and as a player. So whatever coach comes, whoever I play for from here on out, I'm going to be myself. I have enough knowledge of the game at this point to adapt to a style of play, the coach's philosophy, and incorporate my play into that. I'm never going to come out and try and do something. I'm try and be something I'm not or do something I can't do. I'm fortunate to have coaches to put me in successful situations on both ends of the court. I'm looking forward to Coach Malone doing that for us. He said, I'm stubborn in a way. My college coach taught me that to be successful at any sport, you have to be selfish and stubborn. There you go.
I love that because it's true. Like, I mean, we talked a couple weeks ago about the kind of the balance between being stubborn and being adaptable. I think he does kind of personify that pretty well of that. He knows what he's good at. He's not going to go out there and be a different type of player. And at this point in his career, like, he's just a helper, right? Like, if he starts for you, that's fine. But for the most part, like, he's there to teach, and he's there to kind of be a safety valve within the rotation and a guy you can plug in, you know, either as an off guard or as the point guard and be fine. And I think that even, like, defensively, like, there are times where he's just slower and smaller than everybody, and that's gonna hurt him. But you really do see, like, he's a physical guy for us as small as he is, and especially defensively. And I think that he's good at kind of wearing players down in that respect. And it, you know, it does make him a great defender, but it makes him a guy that I don't think kills you to have on the floor despite his size and his age at this point.
People kind of consider him to be this defensive sieve.
I don't agree with that.
Yeah, and here's the deal. Jameer is now slower than a lot of the guards in the game, and he's aware of that. He does not have great lateral speed. But I went back and watched a ton of clips of him, and what I noticed was he was basically doing – and funny enough, these people are going to laugh. LeBron does this. I know it sounds crazy, but LeBron does this, and Iguodala does this too. If he knows he's going to get beat, he actually lets you go because he's not trying to, he's trying to let you not foul, but he lets you go in the direction and the angle that he wants you to go.
Yeah.
So he's driving you to help. Now in Dallas, that didn't work because their defensive rotations last year were a nightmare, even with Tyson. And in Denver, it didn't work because their best center was Yusuf Nurkic, who's right. a rookie and whose best skill is basically elbowing people and pissing everyone off.
Right.
But when you watch, there's not that kind of he's there's no lack of effort. We talked about this on podcast yesterday. Like, there's not a lack of effort defensively.
Yeah.
You mentioned that physicality. Thanks to the assist there, because I actually talked to him a lot about that. Because one thing I noticed, do you remember Fisher, Derek Fisher, and in like the 2009-2010 finals, he would be matched up against guards who should have obliterated him, just yeah. destroyed him. And what he would do is he would immediately chest bump them the second they got across half court.
Yeah.
Just body them the minute they got over half court, and it wore them down physically. And he mentioned, like, when I pointed that out to him, he was like, you know, Fisher was actually a really great defender, and it wasn't because he stayed in front of his man every time. It's because he stuck to his style of play. He was really physical. He's like, you're, and he said this, I thought this is good. He said, you're not going to stop anybody in this league one-on-one. He's like, that's just not going to happen most times. But you can wear them down over the course of the game, bump after bump, bruise after bruise, and it wears on their body. And if you're used to giving it out, it's not going to wear you down as much. It's one thing people don't really realize. Jameer Nelson is strong as hell.
Yeah.
He is jacked in his upper body. Like, a lot of those point guards that are, like, you think of Jameer and you're like, oh, he's kind of, like, small and roundish. If you see, like, Jameer working out, he is ridiculously strong, and he's built himself to be that way. And it's one of the reasons he's lasted in the league so long.
Yeah. He can take and dole out the punishment, and that, you know, that stuff matters for sticking around, especially when you're that small of a guy. And I love veteran guys like him, especially point guards, of just we talk about the passing of the torch and passing of all this knowledge, and oh my God, Kobe's going to teach D'Angelo Russell, and oh, this guy's working out with Hakeem, and like, I think that stuff can be kind of superficial. And we just assume that it matters. Like, if Kareem's going to work with Andrew Bynum years ago, right? We're like, oh my God, there you go, he's fine. Like, oh, Dwight's going to work with Patrick Ewing, it's fine. Like, the coaching doesn't always translate to like continued success with those individual things. It's those you know, situations where a veteran is in the ear of a young guy all year round. Like, Kevin Martin was a good influence on Shabazz Muhammad early on. It's been 2 years. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, he was a guy who reached out there. Jameer Nelson's going to be a guy who is going to challenge his teammates and also help them by teaching them within the moment. And that may hurt his minutes, but I think that ultimately he knows that the game is kind of everything has been passed on and learned and built on throughout decades of NBA basketball. And that's just – there's a certain point where I think players kind of realize, or at least most players realize, that you know, your time isn't necessarily there anymore, even though you're still in the league, and it's time to keep that train really moving.
I think what's cool, when he re-signed, if you look at that on the surface, if I was an outside, if I hadn't paid attention to as much or hadn't talked to him and talked to the coaching staff and the organization and heard about this, you know, there's kind of I would have thought, like, oh man, like, Jameer's probably thinking he's going to start, and like, that's just not going to happen. And instead, like, Jameer said publicly very early, he was like, I'm probably not going to start, and that's 100% fine. He said, I know what my role is on this team. Like, I'm here to help these young guys, and especially Emmanuel. That's why I'm here. As like, I can still contribute on the court, I can still be a part of this team, I can still help this team win, but I'm here to help Emmanuel Mudiay become a better player in this league and to give that back. He gave me a list of the vets that helped him when he was a rook. And here's a trip down memory lane for you, okay?
Okay.
Stacey Augmon.
Yeah, plastic man.
Grant Hill.
Yeah.
He actually said was a huge influence on him. He mentioned this was, you know, real early. It's 2004, so the league was still kind of coming into the early stages of the dress code. And he was like, Grant Hill always looked professional every single time you saw him, and he imparted that was important. He's like, if you want to be a professional, you need to look the part, and that's important. Pat Garrity,
yeah,
now in the front office of the Orlando Magic. Catino Mobley.
Cat. I love Catino Mobley.
And I joked to myself that he was going to say this, and then he said it. Steve Francis.
Steve Francis was, I think, played the most minutes that year on that team.
is that all those guys were great to me and teaching me how to become a pro off the court. I was very fortunate to, one, have the opportunity to be around those guys, and two, you know, he said I was mature enough to listen to those guys, and that was a big part of it. He said something that I also thought you would find interesting when he was talking about the difficulties of being a young point guard, because I mentioned to him that I mentioned this constantly, that Mike Conley told me it takes about 4 years to be a good point guard in this league, and about every point guard I've talked to has kind of said, yeah, that sounds about right. That's about how long it took me to feel like I knew what I was doing. Jameer pointed out, he's like, part of that is you're the point guard. You're the leader on the floor. You're supposed to run the offense. You're supposed to know what everybody's doing. You're the one that's got the ball in his hands the most. You're 19 years old. You've got other guys on that court that have 10, 11 years on you in experience in this league, and you're supposed to tell them what to do? He's like, that's really difficult your first year, year and a half in the league.
And, I mean, you think about it, like, a lot of the guys' livelihood is at stake at the hands of this 19-year-old trying to dole out, you know, assignments and you know, proper shot allocation and all this stuff. Like, that, I mean, that's another added pressure that I think it gets to some guys, but for the most part, you know, everyone can kind of get on the same page. But there are those guys where it's like, you don't get them the ball enough, that's going to affect their financial situation. Like, that's just how it is, because, you know, contracts are very much a production game. And that's got to be an added level of pressure as well.
Yeah, I think that there's just like a whole, there's all these dynamics that go into it, and it was really interesting to talk to him. A couple of closing things, he did mention he held we talked about this in the pod. They held like a week long thing out in Philadelphia,
mm-hmm.
And they did a whole bunch of training with he set this up, and he paid for his teammates to fly out and work together. He set them up in a hotel and paid for everything, and invited every single nugget that could make it. And they did a bunch of different stuff, which we talked about in the pod. But one thing that we talk about is they played paintball.
Yeah.
And Wilson Chandler is apparently like destroyed everybody. Darrell Arthur told me actually how this happened, because he's like, Wilson Chandler was really good. And so I asked Darrell about it. And Darrell Arthur was like, okay, so we're coming up the middle. Our team is – and he was on Jameer's team. Our team's coming up the middle, and we're thinking that we're going to be able to intercept them going left. Wilson Chandler went all the way around us and flanked us from behind and wiped everybody out. And I was like, how do you not see Wilson Chandler coming? He's like, he was behind us.
I like to think that at some point Yusuf Nurkic was on the other team and just ran through and went, Leroy Jenkins!
So yeah, it was a really great interview. I'm hoping to do several of these this year, and I hope everybody enjoys it.
Thanks, and so now this is you and Jameer Nelson discussing being a veteran. Thanks, Matt.
I am very pleased today to be joined by National Player of the Year, Oscar Robertson Award winner, Naismith Award winner, former NBA All-Star in 2009, 11-year NBA vet. Is that right?
11 year, going into 12th.
Going into 12th year NBA vet Jameer Nelson joining us. Jameer, thanks so much for taking the time today. I want to start off this podcast with a vet, talking about you came out of college, obviously, this phenomenal player. And was the NBA what you thought it would be like in a community sense, in a day-to-day life sense, in a non-basketball sense? Were you prepared for what it was kind of like off the bat?
Well, I think so. I mean, and honestly, I had great vets around me. Stacey Augman, Grant Hill, Pat Garrity, amongst other guys, Catino Mobley, Steve Frank, all those guys were great to me in teaching me how to become a pro off the court. So, you know, I just was very fortunate to one, have the opportunity to be around those guys, but two, to really be mature enough to listen to those guys. You know, I had my son early in college, and I think that matured me enough and you know, faster than other guys coming out of college. Just knowing that I had responsibilities and not meaning like I need a car or stuff like that. Like, you know, I need to figure out a way to eat. I need to figure out a way for my son to have clothes. You know, those type of responsibilities, which made it easier for me to become a pro.
It's crazy because you guys are demanded to be these really mature, put together people right off the bat. I mean, you mentioned you had your son in college. Like, I've got a 4-year-old now. I couldn't take care of a plant when I was 21. Like, that would not have worked. Like, and so I bet that probably grew you up right quick. Like, that changes a lot of who you are, and it probably did put you ahead.
No, it does. I mean, you have to, every decision you make, you have to worry about how it's going to affect your child and yourself. You know, you want to make every decision the right decision, or close to being the right decision, because I don't want anybody growing up, I don't want anybody saying, you know, negative things about me when my kids grow up. They hear things about me and look at me different. I want to be the greatest dad I can be, and all greatest teammate and greatest player.
Are the lessons that you learned from those vets, were they how to conduct yourself? Was it within a team setting?
Well, you see a guy like Grant Hill, like, you know, other than going to shoot around, he's always going to have some type of dress clothes on, suit, shirt, pants, something. Pat Garrity, the same way. All those guys dress, you know, the way they were supposed to dress as a professional. Even guys like Steve Francis, all those guys were mature in the sense of, you know, looking like a professional. And I think that's the first thing. You have to look like a professional, be a professional. You can't be a professional and doing certain things. Everything, you have to be right. And those guys showed me the way.
You're kind of an outlier. I read a Draft Express interview with you, and you were saying, like, I'm really glad that I stayed at St. Joe's. Like, I'm really glad I didn't jump to the NBA. And you said that in multiple interviews.
No, for sure. I mean, you know, I wasn't at draft night. I wasn't too happy when I slipped. But honestly, I was happy. Or I look back at the situation, I'm happy because the way my careers went. It was a blessing in disguise. It's one of those things, your ego and your pride, it gets involved in the moment, and you're like, well, I'm better than this person. I'm better than here. I should go here. I should do this. But that wasn't for me. You know, it was for me to get drafted by Denver and traded draft night because they had 97,000 point guards there at the time. But it's just one of those things, you know. I could have come out my junior year and probably more than likely got drafted in the first round. But I don't know if I was ready for that. You know, honestly, I can say, I mean, would have been nice. Yeah, but I don't know. I think that extra year of experience and what I experienced, you know, being 27-0, you know, feeling like, you know, at the time, our team was the biggest team in Philadelphia, whether it was professional or college. So that allowed me to, or had me, I had to conduct myself in a manner where I was representing my family, my university. So same thing in the NBA, you have to protect yourself. When you're wearing anything that says NBA on it, you're representing the NBA, you represent your organization, you represent yourself, and you have to be mature about situations you put yourself in.
A lot of the great vets I've talked to and the veteran teams that they've talked about have said, you know, there's accountability that has to be placed from player to player on the team.
Right.
But you mentioned, you know, guys are coming out and they're young, and then obviously, like, they're 23, 24, and they get huge, you know, the money's big from the start, but then that first contract,
right,
like, that's life-changing money. That's FU money. And, you know, and I've also noticed that there's a transition that happens, and everybody kind of criticized, again, you guys are in a bubble, but it's like the same thing for me. Like, I wasn't mature at, like, 24, and then you look at, like, 28, I was in a much better position. And then at 33, I like to think I've got my life a lot more together.
Right.
And so this kind of transition, when you're trying to hold younger players accountable, do you have to kind of keep in mind, like, some of this is just unavoidable? Like, they're young, and they're going
to
be young.
You're going to be young. You're going to have to go through things. And I think the best judge of character is a person going through things. You can't tell somebody, like, I can't tell Emmanuel, this is going to happen, that's going to happen, because it's not going to happen that way. You know, his life is going to be different than the next guy's life. My life is different than your life. So you have to face those challenges and those and that adversity when it happens and see how you react. You know, I think when a good judge of a good person is when they handle adversity, how do they come out of it? How do they get themselves out of it? And that's what a lot of young guys, you know, they're going to struggle. They're going to struggle at some point during the season. And it's, what are you going to do to get yourself from struggling?
How long did it take you to emotionally get over suffering the shoulder injury in 2009 and how that impacted y'all's playoffs, because you guys were unbelievable that year.
You know what? I have a short memory.
Yeah.
I have a short-term memory, and I can care less what people say about me, because if I did care, I wouldn't have made it this far in my career. When I came out, I was too short. I wasn't quick enough. I wasn't this. I wasn't that. And it was just like went right over my head. But whatever. When I got the shoulder injury, should he come back? Shouldn't he come back? This, that, and the other. You know, I went to each and every one of my teammates and asked them if I should come back. Went to the coaches. Went to the GM. Went to the owners. Everybody. Went to my team. Went to the doctor who did the surgery, and not one guy said I shouldn't come back. So I was happy with my decision. I was happy with everything, and I never was bitter in terms of the injury. The frustrating part was the recovery.
Yeah.
You know, that's just a long recovery. You know, the next year my shoulder was still banged up, and it just happened. Then I hurt my knee. So me hurting my knee might have been a blessing, because it helped me get my shoulder back.
After you got waived by them, I was listening to Jim Rome interviews with you, and I was just so impressed. So many guys, and it's understandable. Like, they use everything as motivation. It's these guys doubted me. I've got a chip on my shoulder. And you said that I'm going to play with a chip on my shoulder, but you never seem to harbor ill will.
No, I mean,
just above that level of pettiness.
Well, I'm not saying, you know, like I got traded last year from Dallas. I'm not going to say, oh, I got a chip on my shoulder because Dallas traded me. Well, when you look at it, it's a business.
Right.
I have a chip on my shoulder because I want to be the best I can be. And that's the chip. That if that's not driving me, I shouldn't be playing. If I have to wait and get a chip on my shoulder because the team waived me or traded me, or if Denver didn't sign me back, I say I got a chip on my shoulder now. Well, where was that chip before? Why don't you have that chip? You should always have that chip as a competitor.
Nobody but you guys were inside the locker room last year, but it was not hard to see that there were some issues, and that was reflected in the record. Yet, I was just stunned by the efforts that you put in to have that team dinner last year, to get the coaches together and the players together.
Mm-hmm.
And you came in, you're pretty new to the team, and you come in and you try and get everybody together on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like? How'd you come to that decision?
Well,
the thing
about it is, you know, when I got here, I can see some type of disconnection. At what point was it basketball? Was it outside of basketball? I don't know. I wasn't here long enough to see that. Or who am I to judge? But as me being who I am, a leader, and try to help others, people out, other teammates and coaches or whatever, I just felt like we just all needed to get together, you know, laugh and joke and do some things outside of basketball. Because when you're on the court, it's business. It's all business, it should be. So I just felt like, you know, it was a thing where I we're going back to Philly. And just so happened I have a house there. And my mom can cook really well, so I just had everybody come over.
And nobody was kidnapped like with the DeAndre Jordan saga. So that's good. What made you decide to resign here?
I'm gonna go back to when I got traded. I you know, honestly, I didn't know if I wanted to come here. I wanted to stay East Coast because of my family. You know, I had conversations with my agent, GM, but ultimately my wife. You know, and I was like, I don't want to go. And when I've never been in a situation, like I said, you don't know what you're gonna do until a situation hits you. Gave myself about 10 minutes to think by myself after talking to everybody I need to talk to, and I'm like, well, you know, there's no reason for me not to go. I'm a professional. This is my job, and they're giving me opportunity to play. So, with saying that, you know, I'm a man of loyalty. So they were loyal to me, and you know, the conversation that I had with the people I had, you know, when I had them, when I got traded, everything has come true. We want you here. This is going to be your role. We want you to do this. We want you to do that. And everything's come true. Even things like you're going to change the locker room. They're changing the locker room. You know, that means a lot to a player. Because it's been, you know, along the way, it's been a couple of people that lied to me over the last couple of years. So once you get back to somebody telling you the truth and, you know, you're kind of looking at them sideways like, well, it, maybe he's going to lie to me. Maybe she's going to, whatever. But the organization has been good to me. They're, you know, we're moving in the right direction. We're not rebuilding. We are building, but not rebuilding in my eyes. We have some things to accomplish. We have some things to do on the court and off the court to be a premier organization, and we're working towards that. And what more can you ask? You can't say it's not going to happen overnight. But as long as we're working toward it and we're together, I'm fine with that. And with all saying all that, that's what wanted me. You know, that's when I wanted to sign back. I'm like, well, they're doing everything right. I can be part of something special.
DeMarcus Ware, when he signed with the Broncos, he said, you know, they talked to him this year, a year later, and he said, you know, last year I was my first year, and you can't just come in and start tossing stuff around. Like, you have to, you know, I didn't know the city, I didn't know the team, I had to get acclimated. Are you in kind of the same position where you're like, all right, I've been here, I re-signed, and now I'm in a position to be comfortable, to be even more vocal than you were last year?
No, when I got here, I was really vocal. Like, whatever I saw wrong, I'm going to say it. And I feel like I can say it because I hold myself accountable. Whether it's to a coach or, I mean, player, strength coach, media, PR, whoever I need to say it to, I said it to. You know, a situation last year where we said some things, or some things came on the media, and I went right to the guy who wrote it, like, listen, you know, and I explained to him what was said, why we said it, and didn't understand why he interpreted it that way without coming to the players first. Mm-hmm. It just makes no sense for somebody to assume something when the source is right there. And that's for anybody. That's not just me. That's anything. That's, you know, why, you know, strength coach anybody. Like, if I'm right here, why would you assume something?
Do you think the relationship between media and players has gotten worse since you came into the league?
No. I think it's actually gotten easier. I think the relationships have gotten easier. I think guys are more willing to talk. Most guys are more willing to talk to the media. Media is always going to try to mess you up and get you tongue-tied. But that's where you have to be mature enough to have some type of background in public speaking or...
Does it always have to be like that? Like, I don't feel like I've tried to trip you up today.
No. But to be honest with you, I'm very careful in what I say.
I understand that.
Right. But
I'm also very careful with what I ask.
Right. So instead of me saying right away when you ask me a question, I think about the question first. You know, a lot of guys, they don't think about the question. They just go ahead and blurt something out. And then 10 minutes later, like, I can't believe I said that.
A lot of it, though, is, I think, not to get too far off on this topic, but I think that there is this idea of, like, we're all trying. You said, like, media is always going to try and do this.
Well, when I say media, I'm not literally saying every.
But that's how it comes out, though, right? It's like, yeah, the idea right. Is that we're all trying to do one thing. And a lot of us are always like,
well, just
that's
like,
not what I do.
Well, just like anybody, any group of people, you're going to get some type of stereotype because one person may do something and everybody's going to take the blame and get the fall for it.
That's fair.
But you've been pretty good.
Oh. I'll probably get torched for that on Twitter for being too good.
No.
So you had this great thing for the players. You know, you got them together for that thing last year, and then this summer you brought them out to Philly, and you had a whole week up for them, and you guys went to Philly's game, and there was like, I know, did you have like a chef out there that was fixing food?
Yeah, at my house we had a chef come and cook some food, but other than that, we went to restaurants every night. We played, we worked out during the day, and then we would play in the afternoon, do some type of activity in the evening. Like I said, we took Philly's game. We did like a dodgeball at a trampoline place. We did.
Who was good at dodgeball? We had a dodgeball draft this year, and I got.
We were all terrible.
Really?
Yeah, because it was the trampoline thing, so you're like off balance.
Oh, yeah.
It was a heck of a workout. More than anything, but we did a lot of things. We did some cool things. We did a war room where we all had to come together, figure out the clues to get out the room.
Oh, cool.
Which we probably still would be there if they didn't let us out. But, you know, it was just another situation where you get guys together outside of the coaches and you basically try to bind in ways that you won't bind during the season because it's going to be hard during the season to get everybody to come and go bowling or go to a baseball game. You know, but in off season, guys don't have too much to do outside of their personal training. And You know, we already, you know, when you get there, you're going to get training. So you might as well come and get the good training, the good 5-on-5, and everything else.
Yeah, the Navy SEAL coming to speak to you, which I thought
was
really cool.
Yeah, he basically talked about the anaerobic threshold when you think you don't have more in the tank, and you really do. It's just you mentally, you shut down, and then you shut your body down. And yeah, I thought it was cool that when we were doing a workout, it wasn't a hard workout, but you could see guys wanting to stop, but they wouldn't stop because they were looking at the next guy. But the cool part of it was he made everybody shut their eyes, which allowed you not to see what the other guy was going to do, but it made you only look at yourself and think about yourself and
tell yourself
I can keep going. You know, I don't know if a lot of guys got that message, but I got it.
You've my guy Ken Berger did a thing on your CrossFit event. Mm-hmm. A couple of years. Are you still doing the CrossFit training?
No, not too much of that anymore. Once you get to a certain age, you got to work on different things. This is the best my body has felt in years. Just
knock on wood.
Yeah, knock on wood. Just getting smarter with training and you know, technology and science is so much better. And
does it make you nervous though? Because there's going to be a whole, like, biometrics is going to be, like, that's going to be like the next 5 years, and that's going to be, I think, a huge thing for you guys as players. Because I'm like a huge tech guy, right. So I'm all about data and tech, and like, right. This is awesome. But on the other hand, I'm also like, man, I would understand guys feeling really reticent to be giving up all of their body's information to their employer. Like, that would make me.
Yeah, it's a little weird. It is a little weird. You know, one team I played for, they wanted us to wear a sleep watch, which was cool. But then it's like, all right, are they testing out my sleep, or are they testing what time I'm going to sleep if I'm out or stuff like that? So, you know, it is what it is. You know, we get paid to do certain things, and certain things we're not going to want to do, but we have to do them.
Which is, ever talked to you about their free time, has always said, I'm a homebody.
I am.
It turns out that every single NBA player I've ever spoken to is a homebody. There's nobody that goes out.
I go out, but I go out differently. I'm not saying I'm not a guy. I don't need to go to the club. I don't need to do certain things anymore. I mean, my going out is a good restaurant, you know, on a Monday night football, watching Monday night football or whatever, and just going back to my place.
Who won the paintball game?
Not my team.
Who was really good at paintball?
Wilson Chandler was really good.
See, and he's so big. I don't understand this. Like, Duncan's supposed to be awesome. I don't understand how guys that are that big, you can't hit
them. I think it's the weirdest guys.
Yeah?
Wilson's a weird guy. No, I'm joking. No, but it's those guys. Like, he was really good. Trainer Steve Hess was really good because he's so small.
Yeah, that Hess was.
But it got intense, though. Like, I was, like, crawling on the ground. It was crazy. It was fun, though, but, you know, my team lost.
Two last questions for you. What's the most competitive you've ever been? What's the most competitive environment you've ever been in?
Any playoff series.
Really?
Any playoff series.
You're the first NBA player to have referenced an NBA environment.
Really?
Everyone has always said college or AAU.
No. It's because it goes from, and I can't remember this feeling in college, but the feeling of going from regular season into that playoff series, you can just feel the electricity from the crowd. You know, it's so much riding on it, even though it's a series, not just one game. But I don't remember getting that feeling in college. I got that feeling several times in the playoffs. And maybe that's why I can reference the playoffs, because I've had it more. I've had that feeling more in the NBA.
When did you first start playing basketball as a kid?
I grew up a baseball player. Then I started playing football. I started playing basketball, like, in the league at probably the age of 9.
So you're coming up on, like, what? I'm trying to do the math.
I'm old, man.
25 years basketball?
Yeah, about to be 20.
About 25, 24?
24.
24 years of basketball. Yeah. You're still coming in here. You're still dribbling. You're still working on the off season. You're going through the entire process. You still love basketball?
I love it. I love the grind. I love the off-season workout, and I've always told myself, if I can't continue to do the things I do off-season wise in terms of, like, getting ready for a season, that's when I know it was done. As long as I can get myself ready, and I love waking up, working out. I love the the part, you know, of my kids seeing what I do before I have to actually go to my real job. I love that part of it. So still love the game for sure.
Jameer Nelson, everyone. Jameer, thanks so much for taking the time today.
Thank you.